welcome here this morning to... I feel like we have to start all over again, but anyway, we were in Ruth chapter 3, and we started looking at the first five verses of that chapter, and we see the plan that Naomi and Ruth undertook as they were seeking to secure for her a husband. And we started looking at the text, and we mentioned that it may seem a little different to our ears. We're living some time later, a different culture, a different time. It may seem shocking, and certainly this is something that was staggering to the Jewish reader. So in the curtain opened on this third scene, and it's a chapter where there's a bit of drama. It said, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you?'" This is what she prayed back in chapter 1, verse 9. The same word is used in 1:9 when she tried to send Ruth back home to her father's house. And the word rest is the idea of settledness, wholeness. And again, she doesn't say, "I'm seeking a place of inactivity for you," as if, I'd like to find a good lazy boy recliner for you. No, she wants her to be a settled woman, to have protection, to have love, to be in relationship. And she said, "Shouldn't I seek that for you, my daughter?" And what she says in those verses is that Boaz is the most likely person to redeem Ruth and Naomi. She says, "Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." So in verses 3 through 4, Naomi reveals her plan to Ruth. "This is where he is tonight. This is what you should do tonight. You should take a bath, anoint yourself with oil, put your cloak on," which would serve to hide her identity until he's finished eating and drinking. In verse 3, "But don't make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." Verse 4, "But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "Are you out of your mind?" No, she doesn't say that. She says, "All that you say, I will do." And again, I said, if you're looking for a Romeo and Julio moment, this is not it. This isn't it. And I mentioned that this had all the elements involved of what we call a very stressful situation, and mentioned that she was a woman proposing to a man. That's what she's doing here. She's proposing to this man. In our society, that would be very awkward, but in theirs, it would be appropriate. And then you have on top of it all the racial issues that were there. She was a woman. She was poor. She was a Moabitess. Ruth the Moabitess. In the story, as we read through here, they're trying to emphasize or establish or tell us that it's emphasizing she was a foreigner. She's a Gentile. She's outside of the covenants of God. And she doesn't belong. And so she's a misfit. And again, the reader of this text, if you're a Jew, you're thinking, it would again be shocking. Can he marry someone like this? And then there's the religious issues, there's money issues, there's issues that deal with her age and position and his age and position. And this all makes for a very tense situation if she is there. And Naomi says, here's the plan. And Ruth says, okay, okay. All that you say, I will do. So in verse 6, start reading there. She went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly. You know, remember, she'd concealed her identity. Perhaps she's tiptoeing. She's coming very softly while everyone is, maybe they're snoring. You know, they're asleep. No one knows she's there. And she uncovers his feet. Aren't you glad this isn't three steps to finding a husband? You know, young girls, you, now here's three ways that you can find a husband or something. You'd be like, wait a minute, that's kind of strange. And she uncovers his feet and she lays down. And verse 8 says, at midnight, literally half the night, his feet are getting cold. And, you know, maybe she accidentally brushed his feet or something, but he wakes up, he's startled. And he turned over. Maybe you've woken up before and somebody's, you know, they wake up and there's someone staring at you, you know, they're like, whoa, wait a minute. This kind of makes me nervous here. And the word means to tremble. It's possible that he shivered in fear. He became aware of someone, and he wokened with a frightened start. Bent forward speaks of a twisting motion. And the text says, behold, you know, it's communicating the surprise of him. He's surprised. A woman lay at his feet, and he said, who are you? And look at Ruth's answer in verse 9. She answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. She doesn't just identify herself, but she lets him know her request. And you notice, and we aren't told, but Naomi didn't say anything like this. You're left to kind of conjecture, but Ruth adds this. Earlier in 2:12, Boaz commended her for seeking refuge under the wings of Yahweh. She came in faith, trusting God for his protection and grace and provision. The expression, spread your wings, that phrase is used in scripture it's an idiom for marriage, to spread your wings. Ezekiel 16:8, there are other places, but Ruth reminds Boaz of his own words, and he requests him to become a fulfiller of his own prayers. The word used for cloak is the same as that used in 2:12, as the same word that was used for wing. And Ruth reminds Boaz of his own words and requests him to become the fulfiller of his own prayer. So that's, and maybe what isn't as quickly readily seen to our eyes, but that was to cover with a wing. That's a token of matrimony. It it reflected the custom, and it's still practiced in the Middle East today. A man will throw his garment over a woman that he decides to take as his wife, and it symbolizes protection, it symbolizes fellowship, it symbolizes care. But she's saying, marry me, for you are a close, for you are a relative. She's asking Boaz to become her human redeemer. She's asking him to become her husband. But in her request, she doesn't call Boaz her redeemer, but merely a redeemer. So here, the tension kind of, I don't know if you could say it reaches a fevered pitch. Now what's going to happen? How can a Gentile Moabitess who's poor, who's outcast, she has been begging, and how can she come to this rich, this prosperous, this man of, and you remember how the workers greeted, I mean, he's someone of importance. He's a mighty man of valor. It's outrageous. It really is outrageous. So Boaz makes a promise. Promise of Boaz there in verses 10 through 18. We're moving a little quicker here. I'm covering some, get done with this chapter today. But he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my servant. Oh, no, he doesn't say my servant. What? Oh, yeah, I misread that. May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after younger men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. So in that verses 10 and 11, he's had a prayer of a blessing for her. He calls her his daughter. He's being very respectful. And then the phrase, you have made the last, or this last kindness, greater than the first, in that you have not gone after younger men, whether poor or rich. You know, Boaz is not just saying, you know, you're a nice girl. The Hebrew word is hesed, remember. It's pledge covenant faithfulness, steadfast love, loving kindness, mercy. You have made this last pledge faithfulness, this act of steadfast love, loving kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after younger men, whether poor or rich. It's a powerful statement about what Ruth has done. First came into our country, you showed yourself to be a woman of faith. You came here and you stayed by Naomi's side. You loved her. Your first kindness was coming with Naomi, committing yourself to Naomi's people and to Naomi's God. But now you're living this out in what he would consider a very amazing and unexpected way. And now, instead of going out and finding a young husband, the implication is that, I mean, they're lining up. I mean, she could have had anyone she wanted. And she decides to seek redemption for herself and Naomi. And Boaz is basically saying, I know what you're doing. And he's delighted. I mean, he's delighted. If she goes out and marries some guy she meets in the field, she'll have no rights to her husband's property. She'll have no right. She won't be able to fulfill the the Torah's requirements to raise up children for inheritance of her dead husband. So what Boaz is saying is that instead of her taking the easy route and just going and getting a husband, you've chosen to stay here and raise children on your dead husband's property to redeem not just yourself, but also your mother-in-law. She's shown covenant faithfulness. She's shown virtue. That's why Boaz is so emphatic that this act is better than what she did at first. So verse 11, he says, "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." And everyone knows you're a worthy woman. This is the same word that's used in Proverbs 31, verse 10, for the virtuous woman. It says in Proverbs 31, verse 10, "An excellent wife who can find, for she is more precious than jewels." And this is, I read something, you know, we know that the Hebrew book is, I should have looked in my, I mean, I think this is a sermon I preached 15 years ago, but there, or you know, the Hebrew is ordered different. It's the books are laid out different in the Hebrew, in the Old Testament. In our English Testament, we have arranged it more, I guess, chronological, somewhat. But in that, the Jews put the book of Ruth right after the book of Proverbs. And you can see that when you're reading it. If you were reading Proverbs 31 and you're reading about this virtuous woman, this excellent woman, and then you go into Ruth, and Ruth is a virtuous woman. So that's kind of interesting. You read about Ruth right after. So maybe that was intended to be laid out that way. But that's what Boaz is saying about this woman. She is a jewel. Verse 12, "And now it is true that I am a redeemer." This is Boaz speaking. "Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight and in the morning if he will redeem you, good. Let him do it. But if he's not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." This reminds you again that every good love story, at least we think of, has drama. There's drama here. Every good love story has an obstacle to that love happening. And here's what he says. Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. What he's saying is there's another relative. He has a right to the land. He's legally obligated to take care of you. It's not my job. I would love to marry you, but I'm not the guy. That's what he's saying. And they talk about the Levirate marriage. Are most of you familiar with that? Okay. Deuteronomy 25, it prescribed, and I'm reading verse 5, and I'll read down through verse 10. It says, "If a brothers dwell and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the dead man shall not be married outside the family to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take care of her as a wife and perform the duty of a husband to her. And the first son whom she bears shall succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel. And if the man does not wish to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate, to the elders, and say, my husband's brother refuses to perpetuate his brother's name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of a husband, a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak to him. And if he persists, saying, I do not wish to take her, then his brother's wife shall go to him in the presence of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face. And she shall answer and say, shall it be done to the man who does not build up his brother's house? And the name of his house shall be called in Israel the house of him who has pulled his sandal off. And we know that in chapter 4, basically, as we zoom out, there's a guy walking down the road with one flip-flop. He can reject that. It's a shameful thing, but he can reject that. So there's a question here. Who was Ruth married to? Chapter 4, it tells that it was Mahlon. He was her husband. And is Boaz the brother of Mahlon?
No.
No, he's not a brother. Not at all. He's a distant relative through the family of Elimelech, Mahlon's dad. It appears, at the very least, Boaz has no legal obligation to Ruth whatsoever. Doesn't owe her anything. And so you can see the tension is now okay, that's strange. And you read commentaries and say, well, he's fulfilling the obligation to the law. Well, he's not. He's not marrying her to obey the law. The law doesn't speak of the situation. It gives no commands to Boaz. So why does he marry her? And that's what we're going to see. I think it comes out in this is that he loves her. He loves her. And in this, Boaz, this is where we start talking about, is he a type or not? Is he a type of Jesus Christ? Well, I think he is, in that really, Ruth is kind of like the church, like us. Jesus loves us not because he's obligated to, but because he's gracious and he's kind and he made a decision to, and we love him, John says, because what? He first loved us. It's all of grace. It's not of law. It's not of legality. It's not of obligation. And so if we were to turn this into a legal obligation, legal transaction, we'd pretty much destroy this other picture that I think is here. But what he tells her is this: I'm not legally obligated to do anything. Some other man is legally obligated, but I love you, and he doesn't love you, and I want to marry you. And he may want just the land, but he's saying, I'll figure it out. I'm going to go figure out. Stay here, and because it isn't safe for you. Leave in the morning. And we're going to have to stop here, but you can think about how this would be for, again, the Jewish readers. This woman, just a year before, was an unbeliever. She was a Moabite. She probably worshipped the god Chemosh. And she's a woman that's there in Israel, that's from a nation, Moab, that is known for incest. Remember Lot? He got drunk And it was through their immorality that nation started. And now she's the definition of a virtuous woman. So it's very interesting. And really, I guess you could say it's somewhat showing the missions of God, the heart for God for the nations. God's redemptive plan extended beyond the Jewish people and extended to the Gentiles. And we'll come back to this next week, I guess. Do you have any questions or any comments? Take a few minutes.
I got two.
Yes, sir.
On the first part when you mentioned the cloak, and it's like it's for the wings, something along those lines, right?
Yeah, covering.
The, the co-